seconds, 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! He puts it up on the left hand. No good. Tipped up. And no good again. Batted away. Tipped into Cody. Indiana's going to win it. They win it.
Yogi Ferrell. Will he take the big shot? Bryant is trying to post. It's Yogi. It's three. Got him all!
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball discussion with me, Jared Morris, the host and co-founder of the Assembly Call, and featuring Alex Bozich, the founder and editor of Inside the Hall. Before we dive into this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink, a quick word from this week's sponsor to begin. This week's episode of Podcast on the Brink is brought to you by SeatGeek. You know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites really seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that really does make it easier than ever before for fans to buy and sell tickets. That's why SeatGeek is the first place I go to when I'm looking for tickets to a game or to a concert. And a big reason why is that SeatGeek does all the price comparison for me, and they'll do it for you too. They search multiple ticket sites, ensuring that you get the best possible deal. They do the work, you and I save the time and money, which sounds like a good deal to me. Best of all, listeners of Podcast on the Brink get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So here's how that works. To get your $20 rebate, download the SeatGeek app, all right, and go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code B-R-I-N-K today. Alrighty, and now this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink. We are very pleased to be joined on this episode of Podcast on the Brink by Greg Doyle, sports columnist for the Indianapolis Star. How are you, Greg?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Doing well.
Good.
Here's how I want to start. So you sent this tweet after IU's game with Maryland, and you said, I know it's win or tragedy, but first hostile environment, little from OG and Bryant, free throws were 22-9 for UM, and IU had a shot at the end, encouraging. And on the one hand, you have a point. It was encouraging, given what we've seen from Indiana over the past month. You know, but I read that, and I was struck by the contrast between expectations now that that tweet suggests, because, you know, we're
right,
a month and a half removed from Indiana being talked about as a national championship contender, and now we're encouraged by a loss on the road to a team that isn't in the top 25. So how should Indiana fans, in your mind, be approaching this season right now? Is it time to kind of reset expectations, or is the standard the standard and we shouldn't be encouraged by a loss that, you know, six weeks ago looked like it should be a win?
Well, Jared, first of all, that tweet shows that my, just like the Grinch, my little heart grew two sizes that morning or something. But I watched the game. I don't like just I watched the Butler game the more, you know, I don't know when this is going up, but we're talking on Thursday morning. I watched Butler game this morning on DVR. I don't stay up that late to watch basketball. I mean, if I'm up that late, I'm reading in bed. So I'm not, or I'm working the game myself, and I'm damn sure not watching it on TV. Plus my ADD, I don't like timeouts and whatnot. But having said all that, you know, this isn't a vacuum. That game wasn't just a road game. It was their very first road game. And it didn't just come with them winning five in a row. It comes with them, they've lost some games, and folks are kind of wondering, oh no. My point was not really that we need to reset and pat Indiana on the head and it was a good try and you're going to win 19 games this year and this was close. No. My point was, and, you know, 140 characters, it obviously doesn't come across, and I'm okay with that. But my point was, there's a lot of concerns about Indiana before this game, obviously. And historically, Indiana has not been good on the road, in recent years anyway. I mean, last year they were, but historically under Kareem, they've not been great on the road, at least since I got to this job. But to see the way they played that game on the road, knowing that they've been struggling for three or four games, bodes well for the future. This team will be able to go on the road and win. So no, I'm not resetting expectations. I am not saying this team's going to try and go 9-7 and let's, this team needs to contend for the Big Ten title. It does, but they're not going undefeated. There's not, you know, obviously, I mean, but they're not going to go undefeated from this point on. They're going to lose. Whoever wins the Big Ten is going to have I would guess, 4 or 5 losses. I just thought that that game showed promise that this team can go on the road and get some wins as opposed to just fall apart like I've seen in the past.
Greg, we'll get into some of the, I guess, issues with this specific team as we go on here, but I'm curious on your big picture view of this program right now. You've been here, I think, since 2014-15 season. You were there when they lost in Omaha. You were there last year for the, you know, the, I'm pretty sure you were at Duke, right, last year?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so you've seen it all. There's been wild swings, I think, in this 3-year period that I think is a big reason that people are frustrated for whatever reason. I mean, what do you've seen this up close? You know Tom Crean. You've written about him. You've seen them at their best. You've seen them at their worst. What do you see as the reason behind the wild swings in momentum that this program has?
Well, if I can address real quick my own personal wild swing in momentum, I have, and I've said this many times on radio shows in Indianapolis, many times, at least twice, and at least once in Indy and once in Memphis. I talk to Gary Parrish every week in Memphis, so I'm not sure where I've said it, but I've said it more than once out loud on the radio, so this is not new for me. But I've called Tom Crean and apologized for the column I wrote 2 years ago saying he should be fired. I've apologized to him. I've apologized to him many times because I'm mortified. You know, I didn't deserve to write that. I'd been on the job for 1 week, and yes, I knew college basketball. I'd been covering it for CBS for 10 years and Charlotte Observer before that. I knew what I was talking about, but I didn't have the right to come in here in this job, in this forum, and you know, I didn't create this forum, but the forum I have, it's the biggest voice in sports in the state, probably, or it should be, unless I screw it up. Whoever the Indy Star Sports columnist is, better be the biggest voice in the state. Better be. And it just happens to be me. And of course, 1 weekend, I didn't deserve to write what I wrote. And I've apologized to him. I've apologized to his wife. I've apologized to his son, who I've gotten to a little bit, just Riley seeing him at games and whatnot. So that was wrong. Having said that, I want to then go forward to say that I've spent the last 2 years, more about the last 18 months when I realized, oh crap, Greg, you shouldn't have done that. I spent the last 18 months. Okay, let me back up one more time. So I wrote what I wrote, you know, he should be fired. And then because I am human and because I have an ego like anybody else, I wanted to be right. And which doesn't speak highly of how I thought, but I'm changing, I'm improving as a human being, but I wanted to be right. And so that year as Indiana struggled a little bit. And when I had the chance and I was at games, they lost. And, you know, rather than my Grinch heart growing 2 sizes and saying, hey, that's kind of encouraging, you know, my Grinch heart shrunk like into a lump of coal. And I just was mean about his program because I wanted to be right and was pissed off that I wasn't. And I'm not proud of any of this, but I don't have, as far as media personalities go, whatnot, I don't have any more writing ability than anybody else. And Lord knows I don't break news more than anybody else. I don't have anything more than anybody else. I don't have any more hair than anybody else. I'm not very tall. I got nothing over anybody else except for one thing, is that I will be brutally honest at all times, even if it hurts me sometimes. I want people to know exactly where I'm coming from, exactly where I've been, exactly how I feel about where I've been. So you can at least, I don't want people to ever, ever, ever question, like, why is he saying that? Because here's why I'm saying it. I'm telling you why I'm saying it. And nobody would say what I've just said and then tell you a lie going forward. This is what I really – so I spent the last 18 months watching Crean's program differently. And what I see is – and what everybody should see. I mean, this is – it's plain as day – is he is gradually getting better and better players, recruiting, and – developing them at a super level. Okay, Thomas Bryant, we're ticked off that he's not yet, you know, a superstar of the Big Ten, but he's developing him. Now the team needs to go to him a little more. But anyway, but OG Anunoby was nobody, and has developed. You know, Troy Williams got a whole lot better under his watch. He develops guys, and I see that. So he's recruiting good players. He develops them. The NBA likes his guys, which tells you something. And I also see him calming down a lot on the court. He's never going to be Brad Stevens. And I sorry to even bring that name up, but he's never going to be that guy that just kind of stares at the game and then walks off. He, he's going to be fiery, but he's not what he was. I guess big picture is the program's in fine shape. It's in fine shape. At this exact moment, their record in the Big Ten is not fine. I get it. But as I tweeted the other day, I realize it's win or catastrophe. But the college basketball season is not like the Colts, where every game is, you know, life or death. It's just not that important in college basketball. The bigger picture matters. And I think they're in the right direction.
Yeah, try telling that to IU fans that every game doesn't matter.
Yeah, oh no, I mean, you know, right. It's just not the catastrophe. Like Butler last night lost by, well, I think it lost by only by 9, but they were down 25 at Creighton. And you know, it just kind of shows the difference in fan bases, I guess. I'm sure Butler fans are not wanting to fire Chris Holtmann today. And I realize it's not apples and apples. Butler doesn't have all the national championships and all that. So it is different, but at the same time, Butler is a top 15 program, and at the end of the year, they're going to be where they're going to be. So let's kind of calm down and see what happens. Whereas IU fans, and I understand expectations, I get it, but because of where they've been in the past, they want to be there every single game.
Yeah.
They want to be 36-0 every year, and it's just not going to happen. And even 30-5 every year is not going to happen, and that's okay.
Yeah. I think you make some really good points about where the program is, and I think Alex and I generally agree with that. I know I mentioned in the Inside the Hall forum yesterday, it feels like, you know, Indiana's program is about, you know, 92% of where IU fans want it. High character kids, you know, academic standards, you know, winning Big Ten championships, all of that. And it's like there's this other 8% out there of being that consistent top 10, top 15 team, making a deep run in the tournament, getting back up to that Kansas, Duke, you know, Kentucky level that all IU fans want. What do you think needs to happen next for Indiana to get there, to go from kind of what you just described to getting to that next level, you know, which is where Indiana fans continue to hold the standard of their program?
Well, I don't know that it's even possible to happen this year at the level you're talking about. They just don't have a point guard, right? And they don't have that guy. And that guy's not coming. They're not going to go on the free agent and pick him up. I mean, they don't have it. And that's a mistake that Crean's made. You know, he's not perfect, but I'm not saying he's blameless. He overestimated what Josh Newkirk would be for this team. And Josh Newkirk's a fine player, but he's not, you know, it's weird how Indiana's almost become Purdue-like, in that every year it seems like Purdue is really, really good, except for they don't have a point guard. And this year Indiana is really, really good, except they don't have a point guard. And so what he needs to do, what Indiana needs to do to hit that next gear is, unfortunately, don't miss on your evaluations of what you have coming in and things like that. And Crean obviously missed on, I'm sure he thought Newkirk was better than he'd be. I mean, or he thought maybe Robert Johnson would be more capable to be that guy than he is. So the bar is so high when you're talking about getting to the Kansas, Duke level, Kentucky. The bar is so high. And that bar is this: you damn near better be perfect when it comes to recruiting, evaluating talent, signing them, and develop. I mean, that's the bar. Perfection is almost the bar, because you can't win 30 plus games every year and make mistakes. You just can't. And Crean made a mistake on the point guard, and so they're not going to win 30 this year, it looks like. But I don't think that's a reasonable bar. Saying perfection is not the bar doesn't mean 19 wins and a number 9 seed in the tournament's the bar. That's not the bar either. But just a number 1 seed every single year, or even a Big Ten champion every single year, is, boy, it's a great goal to have, but it's just not realistic. And I try to deal with reality more now than ever.
You mentioned Thomas Bryant a little bit earlier. I'm just curious your thoughts on how he's played this season. To me, he's been a little up and down, has his bright spots, but then has a game like the other night where he can't finish a play at the rim against DeMonte Dodd, who's, you know, a fine Big Ten player, but not what he's going to be going against at the next level if he gets there. Is you mentioned Thomas Bryant getting better. Is it a slower process, I guess, this year than maybe what you envisioned going in?
Yeah, I shouldn't even have mentioned him under player development. He was better last year than this year. He was, I think. I know. We all know. But I think, to use a Butler analogy again, last night, you know, Butler shot themselves out of the game last night. They took too many dumb 3-pointers early in the shot clock and pushing their down 20, and that's it. It doesn't mean Holtmann can't coach. It means the players are human and they screwed it up. Thomas Bryant is not better this year. And just from watching him as closely as I can, you can see how emotional he is. Last year he was emotional. It was almost always in a positive, fiery method way. You know, it's a, I mean, the kind of emotion you want to hit your wagon to and let him take you for a ride. This year he's emotional and a very frustrated, you know, I'm down on myself. I'm down on everybody. I'm not down on teammates, but the referees aren't calling what I need them to call. And, he's, you look at him, you look how fiery he is. I mean, I look at him and I see a little bit of me. I mean, I'm having that much passion is great if things are going great, but if things are not going great, you're in trouble. And I think things are not going great and haven't, and he's in trouble. So, but I don't think that's because he's not being coached right. I just think it's because he's a very unique snowflake and he's in his own head.
Greg, you wrote a really interesting piece about James Blackmon Jr. after his really strong performance against Illinois, and he backed that up by playing terrific, especially in the second half against Maryland. We know he's been a lightning rod for Indiana fans. Do you think James is underrated, overrated, or fairly rated, given kind of all the chatter that's out there about him?
Well, I think probably underrated, and I'm not saying he's a great defensive player at all, but underrated in that most of the chatter is negative. I mean, I don't know how often, except for what I wrote, how often do you see James Blackmon just be celebrated for being James Blackmon and being a scoring machine? And, you know, you don't see it. What you see and hear is all of his limitations, and he's got some. I get it. But he's the most consistent player they've got this year. I mean, he's the reason they've won several of their games. And you look at Thomas Bryant and OG Anunoby. Hell, you look at everybody else in that starting five. They're the problems this year. James Blackmon is not the problem this year. If there is a problem, but in recent weeks, James Blackmon's not the reason they're not winning games lately and didn't beat Maryland. He's not the reason. He's just not the reason. So that, to me, by definition, makes him underrated in that people want to lump him in there with, you know, he's kind of what's wrong right now. OG Anunoby is what's wrong right now. Robert Johnson having a stretch where he couldn't hit a shot. And I watched that Maryland game yesterday on DVR, because that's what I do. And he was out of control way too much. I mean, Robert Johnson was out of control. He's not helping things. Thomas Bryant's not helping things. Josh Newkirk is, unlike the other three, I don't think Josh Newkirk is really capable of helping things a whole lot. So James Blackmon, if we're listing the things wrong with Indiana basketball right now, James Blackmon doesn't even belong on the first page.
Greg, you made an interesting point earlier. I want to get back to you on a question that Jared asked. You talked about the standard of a program, Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, whoever you want to mention. You know, those are the traditional powers in college basketball have been. Indiana hasn't been to a national championship game since 2002, haven't been to a Final Four since then. I guess in your mind, what you've been around now, you've seen these games, you've seen you've interacted with the fan base, wrote a ton of columns. I guess what should be the baseline, or what should be the standard that Indiana fans, in your mind, should expect from the program?
They need to be in the top third of the Big Ten every year. You know, definitely top three or four every year, and which means you're continuing to win. Doesn't mean you're going to win every year, but you're going to have years like last year where you do win. I don't know. I think top 15 ought to be kind of somewhat reasonable, somewhat realistic. With the occasional year where you're number five, and the occasional year where you're number 22. But, you know, I realize Indiana's got all these national championships, but the world's changed. It's kind of like Notre Dame football. The world has changed. It's not what it was, you know, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, when, first of all, Indiana and Notre Dame, they're not the same. So these are not similar. I'm just bringing up Notre Dame to show how the world does change, and I'll bring up Indiana in a second and get back there. But back in the day, Notre Dame, you know, the Catholic Church ran the country back then, and Notre Dame was the Catholic school, and it was before integration, and it was, you know, everybody wanted to play for Notre Dame, and everybody did play for Notre Dame, and they won national championships, and to this day, there's Notre Dame fans that kind of don't understand why it's not happening anymore. Well, it's not happening because the world's not what it was. It's changed. Now, you might get some amazing coach who's going to win a national championship again for you at Notre Dame, but the world's changed. Like, they're no longer on third base, born on third base, thinking they hit a triple. The world's changed. Well, Indiana, the world's changed. Branch McCracken had a lot of success. I get it. The world's changed from those days. I don't even need to talk about that. But then it took – look what it took, or look what Indiana had when it had a 30-year run where it was absolutely a top three program nationally. A 30-year run, it was them, Duke, and Carolina, I guess, and, you know, Kentucky every now and then would be great. And UCLA was just ending its greatness. But for about 30 years, it seemed like it was Duke, Carolina, Indiana, maybe Kansas. Well, they had Bob Knight, and he's a force of nature that just doesn't come along. And he's, I mean, I don't even know how you say how good he is as a coach. He's might be the best ever, might be whatever he is, he's in the conversation. And that's what he had. Well, you don't get a guy like that maybe ever again. So I don't know, the expectations of what Indiana had when Bob Knight was here are just not fair. And I think that's what the fan base expects, though, is we did it before, we should do it again. Look who your coach was. You didn't have John Brady winning national championships. You had Bob Knight. It's a whole different ballgame. And just to sum that up, so don't hold Kelvin Sampson, although he was a cheater, but don't hold Kelvin Sampson. Don't hold Mike Davis, who wasn't good enough. Don't hold Tom Crean, who is good enough. Don't hold them to the Bob Knight standard, because that standard's not—it's not happening. And whoever replaces Coach K at Duke is not going to be Coach K. And I hope Duke fans understand that.
Yeah. Last question for you, Greg. I mean, in light of what you just said, which I thought was really insightful, and I agree with so much of it. You know, looking at Tom Crean, what he's done, you know, what the expectations are, whether fair or unfair, do you believe that, you know, looking forward for the next 5-10 years, is he the right fit for Indiana, and vice versa? Is Indiana the right fit for him? Will he ever be properly appreciated, you know, kind of given the context of the expectations that he's coaching under?
He is now. When I first got here, and it's only been 2 years, this is the third basketball season, but when I first got here, the guy that he was on the sideline, he was still kind of, I mean, that wasn't right, you know, and the players he had on his team, it wasn't right. And so that's not what Indiana fans want to see. It's not the kind of kid they want to see. And there's a lot of great kids, but basketball team is so small. All it takes is one or two Hannah Perez and you got a problem. And he had a problem. He's doing it looks like a much better job of weeding out, you know, recruits and getting the right kind of kid here. I mean, look at OG. I mean, holy cow. I've got two boys, so I can't, but I'd adopt him if I could. Thomas Bryant, I want to hug him every time I see him. You know, all these, they're all just great young men. So he's the right guy, I think. I mean, he's won two Big Ten titles in 4 years. If he's not good enough on the court, then again, the expectations are wrong. But the way he behaves himself on the sideline, behaves the wrong word. But the way his demeanor is no longer turning people off, at least it shouldn't be, and his kids are no longer turning people off. So I don't look at him and say, yeah, he's okay, but there's another – no, as long as he's kind of in his prime years of coaching, he's the right guy here.
You know, you mentioned OG, and I want to get your perspective on OG, because I wrote an email to our subscribers at the Assembly Call after that last Maryland game. And, you know, you see OG go up for that just monstrous dunk at the end of the game, and you see what he's capable of, and you wonder, why doesn't he do that more? And it almost gets you excited, but it almost gets you frustrated at some of his inconsistencies. But I wonder if we're being unfair to OG and not letting him develop as a sophomore normally develops and appreciating the improvements he has made simply because he's not playing at an All-American level every game, and his, you know, mentality maybe hasn't grown into the aggressiveness that you'd want. What are your thoughts on OG and the progress that he's made, and whether the expectations for him have been fair this year?
That's a great topic and question. I've never thought about it that way. You know, you kind of asked me earlier, is Blackman underrated or overrated? And I have to lean towards underrated given the long answer I gave. I would lean, but it does not mean that Blackman's blameless. I'm not saying that. It's not 0 to 10. He's a 10, leave him alone. No. Same with OG. What I'm about to say is OG, too much has been asked of him, too much, or at least not asked, expected of him from outsiders, including from like me, too much has. It doesn't mean that nothing should be expected from him. It's not a black or white and it's black and we're all wrong and leave him alone. No, he's not been good enough. But the bar for him to hit to be good enough was never fair, probably. You look at where he came from last year and he wasn't on the court much, and then got to play more because of Blackman's injury. And then by the Big Ten tournament, and it wasn't like he was scoring 30, you know, let's not rewrite history. He was scoring 12 a game and doing it in a very exciting way, 10, 12 a game. And so you looked at that and thought next year he's going to do this plus a little more. Well, it turns out he's just doing this. He's 10 or 12 a game, whatever he's doing. but he's not been nearly as efficient. He's not shooting as well as he did last year. Three-pointer, he's just not as efficient. Now, he's also got a lot more tension on him. You know, it's easier to shoot threes when people don't think you can do it than it is when everybody knows you can do it. Where I've been most disappointed in OG is his ball control. He, you know, I think Crean used the word ridiculous earlier this year, talking about the turnovers they've had in a couple of their games. And OG has ridiculous turnovers, just ridiculous. And there's no excuse for that. And furthermore, he is rather, he's just so damn nice. I mean, just so nice, you know? He's not a killer, at least not yet, but you can grow into that, I think, or at least you can grow more into that, if not all the way. And I wish he was more of a killer right now, because he sometimes you wonder, because you watch that dunk and that was absurd, and you wonder, does he not understand how dominant he could be, like physically? You know, the ball is going to go in or it's not going to go in, but just physically, does he not understand that he's different than almost everybody else in the court? Even in a sport where you kind of have to be a somewhat freakish level to be a college basketball player, you're not NBA freaks, but you're not normal if you're a college basketball player. Even in that realm, he's not normal on that level. And you kind of wonder if he's just so damn nice and so new to this whole, you know, because he wasn't a big-time recruit. It wasn't like he was going to the recruiting shows in high school and sizing himself up against other elite athletes and realizing, oh, wow, I'm right there. He had no idea. And he's so nice and so humble, he never thought of himself that way. It just takes some time. So I hope that people will give him more time, because he's going to be special, but it's just, you know, everybody has their own race to run, and his is a marathon.
I wonder if part of that is just the fear among IU fans that we don't have that much time with him, you know, and everybody wants to see him develop into what he will be as a final product, but, you know, he may be leaving after this year. And so, maybe, you know, a little bit of fear that we won't get to see that in an IU uniform.
It could be that if he was in a hurry to leave, he'd be gone, because if he was susceptible to, I got to make my money and I've got to go be a pro. But there's nothing about OG. You know, there's some guys like Troy Williams wanted to be a pro. And I think James Blackman wants to be a pro. And just give them an excuse to turn pro and they're going to do it. And I think Blackman, if it weren't for his knee injury last year, probably is gone too. Just like Troy. I mean, just give me an excuse. Tell me you'll pick me in the second round. I'm gone. OG had that excuse last year, and that's not who he is. You know, and I'm not saying you're a bad person if you want to be a pro. I mean, of course you're not, but everybody's different. He doesn't carry himself like, I need to be a pro. And this year he's not playing at a level that says, and I'm ready to be a great pro. I'm sure he'll do his due diligence, and Crean will too, and we'll tell him the truth after the season. But I wouldn't assume he's gone at all based on how this year's going. Thomas Bryant, and I don't know anything on the inside at all, but I would assume he's back. I mean, Thomas Bryant, first of all, has not been good enough. Now, I don't know about his family situation. I don't know. And I don't know OG either. I have no idea how much money anybody needs or has or wants or whatever. But Thomas Bryant, never mind the offense. He can shoot and he can score and he can do better than he's done offensively. But defensively, he's not nearly strong enough to guard strong, you know, fives. And because the NBA is now either you're a five or you're a wing. That's how the NBA is. And he can't guard fives. And he can't move his feet enough to guard wings. So to me, he's definitely back. And I think OG, if I had to bet right now, he's back too, just because he's got to be seeing you're not ready. So I understand IU fans being nervous about that. But, you know, the fact that he's struggling this year a little bit, there's a silver lining, which means he's not ready to go.
Yeah. Well, Greg, this has been an absolute pleasure. Hopefully we can have you on again soon, because we really appreciate your insight on the Hoosiers.
I appreciate you guys giving me the chance to talk to y'all, but also to hopefully the IU fans listening, because I realize I'm painfully aware of how I turned a lot of people off 2 years ago. And, you know, you make your bed and you got to lie in it. So I'm not blaming anybody but me for that, but I appreciate the chance to hopefully they're listening and hearing that I'm not who I was.
Yeah, we appreciate
and hopefully
the humility.
whoever I am is likable. I'm not assuming it is, but who I was not likable. I get it. But that guy's gone, replaced by somebody else, and hopefully this guy's more likable. He can't be worse. Anyway, thanks for having me on, Alex and Jared. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Greg.
Yep. See you guys soon.
All right, take care.
Thank you very much for tuning in to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. And if you like what you hear on Podcast on the Brink, there are a few good ways that you can support the show and help us get the word out to other IU basketball fans. Certainly, if you like this episode, share it with a fellow IU fan, either on Twitter or via email or however you share podcasts with friends. And also leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to Podcast on the Brink, a rating and a review is always, always extremely helpful. So we appreciate that. And of course, Podcast on the Brink brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, when you make your first SeatGeek purchase, and they will send you a $20 rebate on that purchase, whether that's purchase of a tickets to an IU basketball game, to a concert, to any other sports or music event. SeatGeek is the place to go. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode of Podcast on the Brink. Go Hoosiers.